This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. In today's program, we'll be taking a look at NSA surveillance of all Americans and internationally as well. We'll be speaking with Marcia Mitchell, the author of The Spy Who Tried to Stop a War, Catherine Gunn and the Secret Plot to Sanction the Iraq Invasion. Also today, on the espionage front, we'll be speaking with former presidential intelligence briefer Ray McGovern. And we'll have a first-hand report from the overnight protests in Brazil from producer-correspondent Thiago Barroso. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and in today's program, we'll look even more deeply into the global espionage crisis of the sucking up of private information by the National Security Agency, as well as the consternation in Europe during the G8 meeting over the revelations of U.S. espionage on diplomats in order to find ways to force them to support the illicitly premised invasion of Iraq. But we begin with this. Overnight in Brazil, there was one of the most massive protests in the national history when what started as a protest over civil services, bus fares, and administrative terms became a nationwide protest, sweeping up as many as 250,000 people. Our producer and correspondent, Thiago Barroso, was on the scene in São Paulo, and he files this report.
More than 65,000 Brazilians took to the streets of São Paulo on Monday, holding signs and chanting, "The people have awoken." The protesters stopped traffic, occupied squares, and marched on one of the most important avenues of the city, Avenida Paulista, known as São Paulo's financial heart. In Brasília, the capital of Brazil, a group invaded and occupied part of the National Congress. In Rio de Janeiro, 100,000 people were mobilized. Across the country, more than 250,000 people joined local protests. It's the largest grassroots mobilization in Brazil since 1992, when protesters called for the impeachment of the former president, Fernando Collor de Mello. But why are Brazilians protesting if in the past 15 years Brazil has decreased its poverty level? Why are they taking to the streets when the country's low unemployment rate makes a lot of European nations envy of Brazil? The answer is the growing dissatisfaction with the poor public administration in the federal, state, and municipal levels. The outbreak of the protests was a bus fare increase, which was announced in early June. However, a police crackdown on demonstrators in São Paulo last Thursday helped create momentum for the protests after a few police officers were accused of abusing their authority. For many of the people who have gathered in the streets, the initial protest against the increase of the bus fare became broader. A couple of the new causes are the fight against corruption and high spending on soccer fields and sports arenas to host the Soccer World Cup next year and Olympics in 2016. A man holding hands with his child during São Paulo's yesterday protest carried a sign that summed up the general dissatisfaction. The sign said, "Keep investing my money on soccer fields. I will take my son there when he gets sick. Who needs hospitals?" From São Paulo, Thiago Barroso to WBAI.
You are listening to 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and today the headlines that are consuming the world include these revelations about espionage at high-level diplomatic meetings. According to The Guardian, foreign politicians and officials who took part in two G20 summit meetings in London in the year 2009 had their computers monitored and their phone calls intercepted on the instructions of their British government hosts, according to documents seen by The Guardian. Some delegates were tricked into using internet cafes which had been set up by British intelligence agencies to read their email traffic. This comes as Britain prepares to host the G8 summit, some of whose members attended those meetings in 2009, which were the object of the systemic spying. And it is likely to lead to some tension among visiting delegates who will want the Prime Minister to explain whether they were themselves targets during that episode and whether the exercise will be repeated. To help understand that and related issues, we're joined now by Marcia Mitchell. She is the co-author of The Spy Who Tried to Stop a War, Catherine Gunn, and The Secret Plot to Sanction the Iraq Invasion. And welcome to the Shadow, Marcia.
Thank you, Robert. It's good to be with you.
Well, I want to get into the G's 8 and 20, but first tell us a bit about the British whistleblower, Catherine Gunn, and your work with her work.
Well, Catherine was the Snowden of 2003.
The Snowden of yesteryear, as it were.
Right, right. In the run-up to the Iraq invasion, Catherine was a British Secret Service officer working at GCHQ in Cheltenham when she saw on her email list inbox one Friday morning, she saw a message from the NSA inviting GCHQ to join in a spy operation against members of the UN Security Council. In particular, there were six members that the NSA had targeted, and those six members really held the deciding vote on whether or not Bush and Blair would get a specific resolution legitimizing the war, the invasion of Iraq. She was appalled by this. The fact that America was going to spy on members of the UN Security Council seemed outrageous. Robert, she suffered over that over a weekend. And on Monday morning, she went in and printed out the message and put it in her purse. And when she left the premises, of course, she was then guilty of high crime against her country. She was only 27 and newly married, so it was quite a risk for her. She did confess to having done that. And the most amazing part of the whole case was that the major media in the U.S. ignored this case. When the information that she had taken from her computer was leaked to the press, worldwide headlines read something like, well, some of them in particular, dirty tricks, U.S. dirty tricks at the U.N., that sort of thing. And around the world, there was the kind of outrage that we're hearing right now. Except for in the U.S. It's the most amazing thing. I mean, it was stations like yours and certain members of the media who did provide some coverage, but the major media ignored it. So that most people are still unaware of the Catherine Gunn story and the fact that in an attempt to influence those six nations, to collect those six votes, we were essentially conducting a blackmail operation. The idea was to get personal information on those six members, and the original message said that the purpose was to gain or collect a whole gamut of information that could give U.S. policymakers an edge that could influence the votes of those six men.
Towards United States interest, if I recall.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There are people who say, and by this I mean members of Congress who were in on the plan, as well as who knows how many thousands of operatives within the NSA and related unnamed agencies who have unfettered access to personal data. Can you explain for those who say If you've got nothing to hide, you got nothing to worry about. Just what kinds of pressures, revelations, turmoil can be brought upon a person, not only a diplomat, but a private individual?
I think the opportunities for misuse are enormous. It would be very difficult to cite specifics, but I think we all have things in our history or in our conversations that we do not want shared. When you stop and look at this enormous amount of material that they're collecting now through the really misuse of FISA, people are not getting, analysts are not getting court permission to listen in on conversations. I mean, it's amazing. Probably our conversation is being recorded right now. Probably any emails that I exchange, probably my conversations when I was doing research in Russia, which had to do with an earlier book, I'm sure all of that's recorded. I'm sure it is, and it has been. And it's very difficult to really assess the extent of possibilities of misuse. Now, remember, you know, you had mentioned when we spoke earlier about the 2009 clandestine spying on diplomats. And in that case, if you remember, the director that went out under Hillary Clinton's yes. name, although it actually had been composed earlier under Condoleezza Rice, that directive asked other diplomats to spy on international diplomats to collect biometric information. They were collecting information about like fingerprints and DNA and credit cards. What in the world is our government doing with all that? So when you talk about conversations being just normal conversations, how would they be misused? It's just inconceivable to try to speculate the multitude of ways that kind of personal information might be used to influence us to make certain decisions. You know, it's amazing. It's just amazing.
I think it goes even deeper than is being linguistically admitted by the president, by members of Congress, and by members of the intelligence agencies. For instance, after a briefing that many members of Congress fled the opportunity to be sworn to secrecy, one of them who did attend, Dianne Feinstein, very carefully used the word collect. The NSA is not collecting information. But then she, in a linguistic slip, said that only when they have good cause can they then go and collect the information or retrieve it. And that implies to me that with this big new database being built in Utah, that recordings are made of telephone conversations, as well as this so-called metadata, which is very useful in implicating groups of people. And so does this possibly mean that acoustic recordings that one can only reasonably presume are being made may be converted to text, and then they have the out to say, well, it's not listening?
I hadn't really thought of that, but I think you're quite right. And, you know, when, first of all, somebody has to define cause, you know, just cause for doing that. It's like, you know, the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, assured the country that listening in would not take place without, quote, proper legal authorization, unquote. What is that? You know, so someone could go ahead and get the text of these messages, these calls, under the guise of proper legal authorization or based on a justifiable cause, but nothing is ever defined clearly. I mean, it's ambiguous, it's amorphous, it's whatever they want to make it.
Here is the exact quote from Intelligence Committee member, Senator Dianne Feinstein. She said, an explanation for the pervasiveness of espionage, digital tracking, Facebooking, YouTubing, and everything else one does on the internet or by telephone or electronically in any means. She said, and here we quote, "To search the database, you have to have reasonable, articulable cause to believe that an individual is connected to a terrorist group. Then you can query the numbers. There is no content. You have the name, the number called, whether it's one number or two numbers, that's all you have. And then," she says, "and if you want to collect the content, then you get a court order." That implies the content already exists.
Of course it does. Of course it does. But this sort of thing is not new. This sort of thing is not new. We can go to the Catherine Gunn case, but we can also go back to 1949, Robert, when the government was listening in on Judith Kaplan, who was an accused Soviet spy, and they were listening in on conversations between her and her attorney during the course of her trial. And the government denied that they had collected this information. When we were doing some research on the case to write about that years ago, we found that same kind of designation. Here were numbers. Mm. And supposedly you had to do something else to get the actual information from the tap log. But the tap log existed.
Mm.
It existed in text. And when recordings were destroyed, the text was never destroyed. So, we can just assume that it's there and it's accessible and available. And, we talk about weasel words, but we're really hearing a lot of them now.
The idea of espionage and diplomatic cover is perhaps taken as a rule of the road or a part of the bargain for those who are in the intelligence and diplomatic services. But one of the mushrooming clouds of doubt and intrusion with the revelations by Edward Snowden is that now there is no practical distinction to be made between so-called foreign investigations and domestic citizens presumed to be guilty of no crime other than trying to live their lives privately. And it seems to me that with the FISA courts, which, according to thousands and thousands of requests, never denied one in recent years, that the idea that an American citizen under the remnant Constitution of the United States has any Fourth Amendment rights to privacy or the presumption of protection against unreasonable search and seizure, that the concept of being an American in this global technotronic net that sniffs packets, that copies communications and so on, that this may be an intractable argument despite the U.S. Constitution. How do you view this globalization and the meaninglessness of nationality in the worldwide dragnet?
I think that it's an illusion at this point, this kind of protection, this Fourth Amendment protection. I don't think it exists in the light of recent revelations and in the light, I must confess, of research that we have done in the past. Beginning with research on that 1949 case, being an American citizen and feeling that you have a right of privacy no longer has value, I think. And I would gather that from the way in which you phrased your question. I think that we have given up, not willingly, or better to say, we have lost those rights. We no longer have that protection. We no longer have the assurance that we have privacy. You know, those of us who have lived lives with regard to the laws that concern our society, we are as subject to investigation of this kind, to secret surveillance, as local bank robber or someone who has a criminal history or someone who is suspected of supplying information to a, quote, enemy, unquote. We're all susceptible. I'm afraid that we are all targets anymore, just because we exist and we communicate. And the greater the technology, the more threatening this sort of thing is to us. I think it's one reason why some of the intelligence services, I think, have gone back to the old way of passing information. They've got from human intelligence or from technological communication to passing secrets, you know, using dead drops and things that they used in the past.
We are speaking with Marcia Mitchell. She's the co-author of The Spy Who Tried to Stop a War. That's about Katherine Gun and the manipulations of the fomenting of the war and invasion of Iraq. And you point out that there is a tradition of people of a certain age and a certain principle and a certain ethos who come forward. We're speaking about people like Katherine Gun, people like Edward Snowden, people like Daniel Ellsberg, Thomas Drake, and so many others that we could name. Does the Promethean revelation of insiders about the dirty business going on hold out any hope for you in terms of catalyzing or converting the negligence and ennui of these horrible intrusions?
One always has hope. It's difficult to maintain that kind of hope. It's difficult to look into a future where this doesn't happen. I think it's interesting. Katherine Gun was 27 when she was arrested, and she leaked the information about the NSA. Edward Snowden is 27. Daniel Ellsberg was a relatively young man, certainly not that young, but a young father when he did that. I think perhaps our hope may lie in the young people having a sense of universal ethic that will influence their thinking and their behavior. I don't think that it's among the older, more settled generations. Have we come to say, oh, this is the kind of thing that happens and there's nothing we can do about it, whereas a 27-year-old Edward or a 29-year-old Edward and a 27-year-old Catherine might say, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. I think it's a part of becoming, should I say accustomed to it?
Much like
we come to expect.
Much like the lobster or the frog in the boiling water.
Right. So I don't know. You've raised some very good questions and very provocative questions, and I hope people think about those questions because they're important.
Well, it is great to have you to help us on that search and that journey. We have been speaking with Marcia Mitchell, co-author of The Spy Who Tried to Stop a War. And Marcia, why don't you tell people about your ongoing work, where to follow your insights and the book and all the other good work you do?
Well, I have gone back to do some review work on this whole subject, and I'm very interested in it. I'm particularly interested in how young people, I'm just speaking about that, accept these kinds of things that are happening. And I spent a week before last with the daughter of Judith Kaplan, and this woman who was charged for espionage in 1949 that I spoke about, whose conversations with her attorney were tapped. And this is a young woman who is very concerned about this sort of thing, but her story about her mother is fascinating, And she's going back, and in a sense, she's taking me back with her, just, you know, emotionally and mentally thinking about these cases and what happens when our government, I think, overreaches its power. So I'm at the moment, I'm actually playing with a couple of pieces of fiction, but this whole area of inquiry remains very important in my life. And I've gone back to look at some the stories of a number of women spies that I'm interested in writing about. And I was thinking just this morning and talking about Melita Norwood, who spied for the Soviets and who was outed, you know, 40 years later. We're quick to judge, and I probably will continue to do this kind of research because it fascinates me. I'm not saying that we should all be traitors or that any of us should be traitors or that we should be unpatriotic or unfaithful or that we should abandon our ethics. That's not the case. The case is, I think, for me and why it will keep me intrigued and interested, the case for me is that when an individual citizen sees what they believe is truly morally and ethically wrong and has the courage to speak out at personal risk. And Catherine's life has not been good. She has a master's degree in Oriental language. She was a Mandarin translator at the time of her arrest. She was not convicted because of misbehavior on the part of the government. Lies that were told and revealed. The day that she went on trial at the Old Bailey, the British government, with her confession in hand, appeared before the court and said, "The Queen presents no evidence," and Catherine was free to go, even though she had confessed to high crime against her country. She spoke out because she saw what she believed was truly morally, ethically wrong. And her life has not been easy. It's been difficult to find and to keep employment. She lives with this over her head. One can only imagine what will happen to Edward Snowden. I think the government will be relentless in searching for him. I think that there are enough people who probably will be clearly involved and interested that the government's going to have a difficult time doing all of the things that have been threatened. But in any event, I find this whole area of inquiry of utmost interest, and I probably will continue to be involved.
Well, I salute your good work in bringing these truths forward through your book, The Spy Who Tried to Stop a War, Catherine Gunn and the Secret Plot to Sanction the Iraq Invasion. And you're most recently the author of a piece called Spying on the G20 Summit, as well as a British precursor to the Snowden case. And I thank you for joining us today, Marcia Mitchell.
Thank you, Robert.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And in the mix on this subject, before we go to former presidential intelligence briefer Ray McGovern, is the statement made over the past few days by WikiLeaks publisher Julian Assange, saying that Google is not your friend, and that the incest between the government and private data gatherers, whether it be Facebook or Google or any of the other advertising intelligence scoops, means that virtually the moment that you touch an electronic device, unless you are very, very specifically careful, you are on candid camera. We have this also from the Electronic Frontier Foundation with the deceptive term metadata, which means that millions, if not all, American phone calls are being warehoused and information about them and probably recordings and transcriptions of them through the NSA and related agencies, Fort Meade, Utah, and elsewhere. The term metadata is tempting for those uninitiated in the mathematical sciences and philosophies. It sounds like, oh, it's just wrapper information. It's just what's on the envelope. It's not the content of the letter. Here's what the Electronic Frontier Foundation has to say about that. They make a few examples about why one ought to care about one's metadata being in the hands of people they've never seen. EFF says that what they're trying to say through the deceptive term metadata, the details about phone calls without the actual voice, they're saying that's not a big deal. Not something for Americans to get upset about if the government knows. Let's take a closer look at what they are saying, and here are just a few examples. They know you rang a phone sex service at 2:24 a.m. and spoke for 18 minutes, but they don't know what you talked about. They know you called the suicide prevention hotline from the Golden Gate Bridge, but the topic of the call remains a secret. They know you spoke with an HIV testing service, then your doctor, then your health insurance company in the same hour, but they don't know what was discussed. They know you received a call from the local NRA office while it was having a campaign against gun legislation and then called your senators and congressional representatives immediately after, but the content of those calls remains safe from government intrusion. And finally, they know you called a gynecologist, spoke for a half hour, and then called the local Planned Parenthood's number later that day. But nobody knows what you spoke about. That from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and we're now joined by Ray McGovern, former CIA officer and presidential intelligence briefer. Welcome back to 5 O'Clock Shadow, Ray.
Thanks, Robert.
You, among so many people do I most want to speak with today, I'd first just like to open the floor to your assessment of the importance, meaning, and impact of the recent NSA revelations by Edward Snowden.
Well, I think Edward Snowden did us all a monstrous favor. Without courageous whistleblowers like Snowden, who not only knows the Constitution, but has two other things, a conscience and courage. Without people like him, we're just a half step away from fascism in this country, and I use that word advisedly. Now we know that lots of people have lied about all this surveillance. Lots of people continue to lie, including the chair of the House Intelligence Committee today, Obama yesterday. There's an endless stream of people who do not tell the truth. And it's high time that the American people would wake up to that, listen to the truth tellers, and take a look at Snowden for who he is, what he did, and the great risk that he took in putting his neck out so that the rest of us could know what's going on.
Well, Ray McGovern, let's talk about the lies, half-truths and half-lies that are being told. We were speaking earlier with Marcia Mitchell about Katherine Gunn. We were speaking about the parsing of words, the metadata, the fact that, well, we're not collecting everything. Can you help give us vocabulary to eliminate that haze of misspeaking of the actual facts?
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned Katherine Gunn, because she is a close friend and a winner of the Sam Adams Associates for Integrity and Intelligence Award 9 years ago. She was our second winner. Hmm. Now, I mentioned Katherine Gunn because she was 27 years old at the time. Snowden is 29. Mm-hmm. Bradley Manning, who also thought we deserved to know the truth, was 22 when he released all those documents. So this is just by way of saying it gives me great hope. It gives me more encouragement than I've had in years to see that young people are willing to stick their necks out, people are willing to risk everything to let the rest of us in so that we know what's happening to our Constitution. Now, when Katherine Gunn saw that directive from the National Security Agency, perhaps Marcia talked about this, but it was an email, and it instructed the British GCHQ, which is pretty much a branch of NSA, their electronic eavesdropping department, it instructed them to surge their capability on UN Security Council members. Why? Well, it was February 2002, and I'm sorry, 2003, mm-hmm. and Bush and Blair were really set on this war against Iraq, and they didn't want any shenanigans by these upstarts, particularly the third world countries. They wanted to know exactly what they were talking about, and when the vote came to the Security Council, they wanted to know how they would vote. They wanted to warn them ahead of time that they shouldn't play around and vote against U.S. and British preferences. Now, when Catherine Gunn saw that on her computer screen, she said, "My God, they are not only about to launch an illegal, a horrendous war on a country that poses no threat to us, but they're trying to orchestrate things in such a way that the people who could prevent their plans at the UN can be controlled, can be sort of stymied in those attempts." And so when I asked her why she decided to do what she did, and what she did was print out a copy of that thing and took it home with her, she said, "Well, Ray, I've always ever followed my conscience. And my conscience dictated that I just couldn't. I couldn't make an excuse for myself by saying, I made a promise to keep everything secret. I couldn't keep that promise when this supervening value, that's what the ethicists call it, okay? Value stopping a war, okay? Stopping all the things that happened because of that war.
Right, let me stop you right there at this very moment. When Barack Obama, the great peacemaker to the Muslim world and the Islamic world, is now echoing people like John McCain and Bill Clinton and saying that he will now enhance the clandestine aid that's already being funneled through NATO, through Turkey, and weaponize even further the murderous Contras in Syria that have long been supported by the United States, of course, with the overthrow of Libya, etc. When we talk about Catherine Gunn and the false creation of the Iraq War, Barack Obama is right now involved in the false creation of the Syrian war. The idea of a no-fly zone is being discussed without any shame. The precursor for invasion, highly targeted bombing, overwhelming air superiority, and so on. Can you tell us why these issues of whistleblowing and the cover-ups of members of Congress, why it is important now above all for the protection of humanity for these things to be known so they can be counteracted?
Well, that's precisely why I take great encouragement from Snowden, from Catherine Gunn, from Bradley Manning, from Daniel Ellsberg way back then. Whistleblowing is contagious. And when they look at a man like Snowden, who risked everything, okay, and still risks everything, and is out in the open giving interviews saying why he risked everything. And the only thing they got on him is that he's too articulate. It's elitism. These people saying, somebody must be giving him paragraphs to say because he's far too literate to have only a GED. You know, he didn't finish high school. He didn't finish college. You know. Well, the guy is golden. And that just shows you what a young man can learn by tuning into chat rooms and everything else on the internet. So the answer to your question is this. There are, I'd say, 50 people in the CIA and other related agencies in this town of Washington who know about chemical weapons in Syria, whether there are any, whether any have been used, or whether that's not the case. I suspect that it's what we call in the Bronx a crock. That if there have been any sarin exposed, it's probably by provocateurs, probably from a neighboring country, perhaps beginning with the initials IS.
Or in the case of Iraq and Iran, it could be bumblebee pollen.
Right. Well, we've had that too, right? So, we've had that in Southeast Asia. Perhaps that's what you're referring to, the bee excrement that was is considered to be chemical weapons. Anyhow, this thing can be twisted in such a way, and Obama, unfortunately, has shown himself not above being the twister-in-chief, so to speak. Now, he runs a real risk here. You know why? Because I'm convinced that there are still people where I used to work in the CIA with a conscience. And there are also very smart people at the CIA who know that this is just one more fool's errand, that the only people who would profit from deeper involvement in Syria are people who want to keep Shia and Sunni at each other's throats for a prolonged period of time so that they can sell weapons, so that they can carve up that part of the Middle East so that Israel has no real united foe to worry about. Now, there are a lot of people that know which end is up, as I would say here, and I sorely suspect that one or two of them is going to say, you know, this is too much. I'm an American first. I have a conscience. I know what the Constitution says. And the president, if he's not going to go to Congress, a legitimate Congress, and ask for declaration of war or some kind of authorization for war in Syria, I'm going to go and maybe take the next flight to Hong Kong and tell what I know about this charade. So that's the good news. The good news is that people, you know, people like, Blumenthal, the journalist, Max Blumenthal has a beautiful piece today on the goings-on this morning about Mike Rogers, the FBI former person who now heads up the House Intelligence Committee. And what he's saying here, namely, NSA has not been recording American phone calls under any surveillance program, and any claim to the contrary is misinformation. That's not true. And FBI agents are coming out of the woodwork to prove that's not true. Here's one example. Remember the Boston bombings?
Mm-hmm.
That way they were on the 15th of April. Now, an FBI agent testified.
That's right.
That they monitored the content, you know, not the metadata, the content of a conversation between Tamerlan Tsarnaev and his wife on the 18th. And that helped wrap them all up.
It's not just the character of your metadata, it's the content of your calls.
It's the content of your message. So this is, you know, Clemente is the FBI agent's name. He's asked by Aaron Burnett there on CNN. They can't monitor conversations, can they? Clemente says, of course. We have ways in this is a quote, we have ways in the national security investigation to find out exactly what was said in that conversation. It's not necessarily something the FBI is going to want to present in court, but we do it all the time. Give me a break. Here's Mike Rogers. Now, what credibility does he have? Now, my point simply is, but there are a lot of honest people around in Washington still. That does not include, sad to say, Mike Rogers, head of the House Intelligence Committee, James Clapper, National Intelligence Director, who lied under oath, President Obama, who's supposed to be protecting the Constitution, and our chief law enforcement officer, Eric Holder, who makes a mockery of the law. And so what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to spit back and go, oh, yeah, darn, gosh, I wish it were different. Well, no, that's not what Americans do. What Americans do is stand up to it.
Well, Ray, in our future conversations, I'd like to really go into some depth with you about the difference between the days when you, through four presidents, were giving the daily intelligence briefing and the Pandora's wealth of technical, commercial, private, and governmental electronic intrusive ability. But in the 2 or 3 minutes that we have left, I'd like to note to our listeners that those in the New York area have a wonderful chance to see you live in person speaking about such things tomorrow at the historic Cooper Union in New York City. What's up with that?
Well, I'm very much looking forward to being one of the major speakers on these very live issues. NSA surveillance, the other things that are going on, Syria and other indignities that have been uncovered by people speaking out about this administration. It's being run by the World Can't Wait, and it's been orchestrated just over the weekend, so it's rather new. I'm not sure how much information is on their website, but chances are there's a lot there already. If not, tune in tomorrow morning. And you'll get the whole agenda. We have the entire auditorium, which seats 900 people, And we expect an overflow crowd because these are issues that New Yorkers, I'm proud to say, as a New Yorker, are concerned about and, best of all, willing to do something about.
Ray McGovern, your work, where can people follow it electronically if they're unable to make it to the New York event on Wednesday?
Well, my website is raymcgovern.com. It's pretty easy to remember. I published first on consortiumnews.com because I need an editor, and Bob Perry is the best in the world. I suspect that these events tomorrow night may be live-streamed, but in any case, go to the World Can't Wait website, and you get full information on that.
Ray McGovern, always a revelation to have you on 5 O'Clock Shadow. Thank you.
Thank you.
And indeed, this is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. My name is Robert Knight, and we welcome your comments and questions and leaks and suggestions with an email to theshadow@wbai.org, and we leave you with these thoughts.
And that concludes today's 5 o'clock shadow. The program was engineered by Michael G. Haskins, Reggie Johnson, and Sean Rhodes. We welcome your comments, questions, leaks, and suggestions with an email to theshadow@wbai.org. And for 5 o'clock shadow, I'm Robert Knight in New York.